overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
And so we ring the bell to condition the mind. The mind loves to be conditioned. It basically says to the mind, stop thinking. Stop your narrative. Because the mind, as they say in the South, goes on and on and on until it doesn't. And then this beautiful pregnant pause exists, this vast silence that you realize was always there, but we weren't hearing the vastness of the silence because we were caught up in the noise, in the voices in our head. And this Sunday, we're going to finish our series called Emergence, where there is this presence that is awakening within humanity. I believe it's awakening within our planet itself. The planet is waking up.
Well, what do you mean the planet's waking up?
Huh. In Llewellyn von Lee's book, Awakening the World, he said it's important that the soul of the world becomes conscious. And so it's not just humanity that it's awakening, but all species, in a sense, are awakening to our interconnectedness. Huh. And then we begin to listen to one another. Suddenly the raindrops that fall have a meaning. I listened to our revealing service and people talked about their relationships to their gardens, their relationships to ants that might show up in the kitchen when they're in a state of meditation.
Well, what am I supposed to do now? Kill all the ants?
Huh. I went to the graveside of the possum that I buried with her little things when I came to church this Sunday morning to see if the flowers that I'd planted were growing, and instead there is an anthill that had claimed the grave. And so I smiled to the ants as I realized this is nature's way of creating balance. Now, I could have gotten angry and opposed the ants and gotten out the ant poison, but instead I made peace with it. And I saw it all as a part of the dance of life. And then I asked myself, is this all we ever do? Is to show up for the moment and meet our own resistance, to meet our own reactive self?
And the voice said, yeah, that's what you get to do.
You get to show up for every moment of every day and say, who am I? And if the who that shows up is an angry person, well, then you get to be with that angry person and listen to that anger. And oftentimes the anger is a mask for hurt. A lot of folks got very angry about a shooting that took place in Texas, a senseless shooting. But as you listen and go deeper, you can also touch a deep sadness, a sense of grief, and an overflowing compassion for all those who were affected, because we're all affected. And then as this awake presence begins to come alive within humanity, we begin to hear the insane arguments that we have been carrying forth. The argument that we have to fight against evil by arming ourselves in a war against, you can name the enemy. And then you hear Jesus, on the other hand, saying, learn to love your enemy, because there's really only one here.
Well, what is it? Are you supposed to fight the enemy with your guns? Or are you supposed to love the enemy?
Bert asks me, and I said, well, Bert, you just tell me, what do you want to do? When you go to the dog park and you see a dog that's unstable, are you going to fight him? Or are you going to waddle up to him and let him know that you're safe here?
Well, of course I'm going to let him know he's safe here. That was my job at the dog park, to greet them and let him know that this is a safe place.
I said, well, you're right, Bert. Maybe that's my job, too, is to let people know that this is a safe place. I hear Albert Einstein in my head, one of the ancestors, who says, you either believe the universe is user-friendly or you don't.
Well, I think the universe is user-friendly, don't you? I mean, it's a safe place to be here on planet Earth. The only ones that are kind of crazy are the people.
Yeah, that's right, Bert. You get some crazy people. But when you embrace the crazy people and you hear them, what they're saying, they're really just a frightened child that's acting out from a distorted position because the adults tell them that you need to fight evil with good. And who's to decide what evil is?
Well, I think that it requires some growth, don't you?
I said, yeah, Bert, it does. And so we come here to get real on Sunday mornings, to look at the darkness and not turn away from the darkness, and to find the light inherent right there, to notice this absence of love, and then find in the midst of the absence there is presence there. So could we call forth the eternal echoes of presence in the midst of forgetfulness? That is our job, to be the bringers of light. And so this first week of May, we explored that we're light beings. And that God is light and God is love, and all there is God. And so when we experience our true nature as light and love, and realize that there is no other light, that it's all the one light, and it's all the one love.
Well, then how could you have enemies? It's all you.
That's right, Bert. It's all you. We exist in a unity, an ancient unity. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one. One life. God's life. And that is our life. And so you have to be so humble to know the truth, that there is only one here revealing itself, and we are it. And the more we let go of this idea of separation, the more we can awaken and give birth to this emerging consciousness that Barbara Marx Hubbard calls Homo Universalis, the universal human. And then once that begins to awaken within the community, well, then we realize that we are here to walk each other home, a home that is a place within and all around where we are all connected in a belonging to the one that knows no other. This is the call from deep within the one life, within the one heart of humanity. It says in the Quran, am I not your Lord? To which we say, yes, we witness you. And it says also in the Quran, when you remember him, he remembers you. When you remember this divine light and love, it begins to awaken within you. And then through the eyes of love, you see love mirrored back to you wherever you look. Is it that simple?
Well, I think it is.
Even in the ants?
Yup, it's in the ants. It's in the chipmunks, even though you want to be at war with the chipmunks.
It's in the birds, in the heavens. It's everywhere. And when you're ready to play in the playground of the unmanifest, I invite you to open your eyes. Be here now. Open to the inevitable moment. We're teaching this wonderful class on Wednesdays. It's called Ordinary Freedom. And John Burney, he's a non-dual teacher. He has a way of telling you, because this last Sunday, we're going to explore the way we practice. And he says the way that you practice, this is ironic, is that you open to everything that you've been avoiding. He says the very thing that you've been avoiding is the very thing that you've been yearning for.
Well, that doesn't make much sense, Sylvia. the very thing that I've been avoiding. You've been avoiding moving those blueberry bushes. Well, now they become the longing to divide the blueberry bushes and share them. So you realize it's not either or. My beloved Terry is beginning to see her past with fresh eyes and to see the grace and the beauty in what heretofore she would have labeled as a dysfunctional past. Well, now she's beginning to shift the way she sees it.
Well, what if you could shift the way you saw that breakup? Instead of being a bad breakup, maybe it was a necessary breakup, and it gave birth to a whole new order of being.
There's that wonderful man, I think his name is... I can't remember. The guy from Canada, who talks about the necessity of dying to an old identity and giving birth to something new within us. And he says it truly is about a death to a whole way of seeing things and then heralding this awakened sense of who we are as one life. And that's why the Sangha is so important, because we're all pieces of the Sangha. We're all part of the one, the universe, the one life, and its awakening within humanity. So John Burney, in this lovely little book, Ordinary Freedom, he kind of blew me away when he said, so when you come full circle, what we're avoiding in life is actually what we want.
Whoa, that doesn't make sense. What do you mean? It's all paradox, the very thing. You're avoiding resolving that relationship with your ex, and so a waitress throws the thing on the floor, and you all of a sudden begin, I need to resolve this right here and now. If it's at IHOP, it's at IHOP.
So that which we're running from is actually that which we're yearning for.
Whoa, this is kind of confusing.
So, I don't know. The way to freedom from what we're avoiding lies in opening to that pushing and pulling, that resistance, that not naming it, that not identifying with it, that not fixing it, or controlling it, or categorizing it, or believing it, or rejecting it, which is what we all do. We try to get rid of what we don't want, we analyze it, we compartmentalize it, we say, I don't want to take this into the future, and so we've compartmentalized our life because we want to fix everything, we want to be in control, and that's the illusion.
Whoa, you mean that's the way we practice now?
Yeah. Face your stuff. I was telling the Revealing Service, my colleague Carol Carnes wrote a scathing treatise to Centers for Spiritual Living. It's on their website. I haven't read it. But basically says we need to get real as a teaching. We need to get past this Pollyanna way of approaching life and face the darkness, not trying to fix it or control it or categorize it, but open to it. And he's saying the same thing. So what is that growing something in your life that is the very thing that you're trying to deny? Someone shared with me that I think it was you, Paula, that you found this wonderful herb that will help avoid grief. And I was saying, why would you try to avoid grief when grief is the most beautiful byproduct of love? If you've ever loved somebody deeply and they're no longer here in form, Michael knows that, then there's this sacred thing called grief that we get to hold on to. And then we get to lie in the arms of our beloved, like Tia is doing with Shay, and you call it good grief. It's not bad grief. Stop pushing it away. You've probably heard it said that there's nothing to do and there's no one to do it, that it's already done. Well, that is what this means. Simply the awareness that encompasses it and permeates all of it. Everything becomes then radiant, and everything is radiance itself. So you understand that the way you practice, as Jesus would say, you love the enemy. Now, the enemy isn't something outside you. You don't need to arm yourself with an assault rifle on what you think is the enemy. The enemy is a projection of something within yourself that you projected out onto the world. He understood that, because there's only one here. How could it be otherwise? So when you're loving the enemy, you're loving your shadow stuff. You're loving your addictive patterns. And the only way that you can counter or transform anything in life is by loving it. Robert knows he has three wonderful children, maybe four. He loves them all. When they go through their troubled times, you don't sit there and condemn them and label them as bad and try to fix them or control them. No, you court that inherent something within. That's what we do in every satsang and every class. There is this something that awakens, and it is your liberating force. It's your true nature. And if you're Joanne, you take darshan with the dog, Wally. And Wally says, well, you know, I got it. Those humans don't sometimes. And then you realize, could I find this interconnection to the one life? I was telling the Revealing Service, Serena Sage texted me and she saw this show on Netflix. It was called Rescued by Ruby, based on a true story. It's a happy movie, a Netflix movie, based on a man who was a mess, whose life was falling apart, and he gets a rescue dog named Ruby, who nobody wanted. She chewed up everything. She destroyed every household. She kept being brought back to the pound. He said, if she's brought back one more time, she's going down. But wouldn't you know it, that last time was golden, because he was worse off than she was. And after a while, the wife saw it. She said, you're ADHD. You call her ADHD and two HD. She said, the dog is more stable than you. And after a while, you began to see this beautifully true story, how it's not a bad thing. It's a thing that will set us free once we open to it. So he goes on to say, that's why one of my favorite things in life is to admit that I was wrong. You know, there's so many people that think they have all the answers. And when you could admit, you know, maybe I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the perfect relationship with Mermi. I thought it was. I had a dream that it was going to be, but maybe it wasn't. Well, maybe I was supposed to be a school teacher instead of a minister. Well, maybe you shouldn't have been. So the willingness to be surprised is really useful. I love being told that I'm wrong. It's really amusing to me. And being wrong is a good thing to be amused about, because if your identity is so wrapped up in being right, well, then trust me, you're going to suffer so much more. Have you ever noticed? It was Wayne Dyer. He says, two things that will help save your marriage. Any of you who are caught up in a marriage, he says, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And he said, I've learned I'd rather be happy. And so when my wife tells me that the moon is made out of blue cheese, I say, yes, honey, instead of me telling her the way it is. And so what if we could stop thinking that we have all the answers? Needing to be right, he says, is about your belief system. Now, we have a lot of people, when I drive home from church on Sunday mornings, that stand outside that Presbyterian church and say all abortionists are murderers and killers of children. And they have this propaganda that they throw with their placard in your face. And you know what? I don't react. I just smile and know that this is just ignorance, I guess. But it's their belief system that they're coming from. Beliefs, he says, make our minds brittle. Beliefs make your minds brittle. You know, they're so concerned about our school system and about what the children read. And they say, we only have two genders, not five. What is this LGBTQ? Five genders? No, there's just one. And we have to protect our children from this gay agenda. In the meantime, arm yourselves and give the teachers assault rifles, right? Can you see Judy Graff with an assault rifle? If you put an assault rifle in my husband's hands, he would blow his foot off. I absolutely know that. Beliefs make the mind brittle, and they also make it fragile. All belief comes from the ego. Now, what would life be like if you could absolve yourself of any belief system? That I believe it should look a certain way? Well, you don't really know. You know, in the Tao, if everything is in a flow and if everything is the one, well, what if it's so much different than what we thought? That we're all in this together. Beliefs make our minds brittle. And then the very last thing he says, it is the fuel, the fire, the Shakti. He says, what we are is energy. We are all Shakti, the energy of the divine. Is this too big an idea? He says, everything is Shakti. Everything is love. Everything is light. Everything is freedom. Everything is this vastness unveiling itself. Well, then where does the finite self come in? Well, that's a good question, Bert. If it's all the one, and the one operates in multiplicity, well, then this idea of creating a separate self that's special. In fact, in the Course in Miracles, the one thing they warn against is a special anything, a special love, because you put it into form. There is no separate form to make special. So at the end, he says, realization is simply shifting, shifting into a simple awareness, a simple understanding. And he says, that's all it is. It's already happening. The sun is already radiating, and we are the sun. We really are. Well, that's kind of a daunting thought that you told me I'm the sun. I'm the light of the universe. Well, maybe that's a bigger idea for you to blow your little idea. What do you think? You know, I love Thomas Merton, who jumped off the shelf at me last week when he was speaking to the monks up there in Gethsemane. And he told his brothers, he said, brothers, he said, it's time you realized that you're not separate out there, that we come from a vast unity. And this isn't a new unity. This is an ancient unity. There's a oneness that's awakening. And if you monks can't get there, well, how do you expect the normal people to get into this oneness consciousness? So we're playing with consciousness. We're playing with oneness. And I love to use the, you know, the mind is an interesting thing. When you have a very developed mind, and I think we all do, the mind loves logic. And so it's an attempt that I do every Sunday to give you some logic, because the mind likes to feed off logic. Look at Anne-Marie. She's a very logical person. But then the mind also loves the divine imagination, where it gets to ponder the imponderable, where it gets to go beyond the limits and the constructs of what we've held, the engineer's mind. I was sharing with the group when I first came to Huntsville, we were overwhelmed by engineers in this science of mind teaching. Barbara remembers. I think the fact that they all came from such an intellectual engineering background, they wanted a spirituality that was logical and compartmentalized and that would have all the answers. And they would want to quantify it and measure it. How much energy is there to love? I mean, the questions I would get, I had no answers for. And they wanted answers to spirituality. And what I've learned is that it's the mystery. So could we open to this emerging mystery of belonging, where our own yearning is part of the divine belonging, and it's coming together in a creative something? That's why I love the Sangha, because you hear the voice of the one. John Burney, this is just a series of Sanghas, and he says the purpose of a Sangha or a satsang is to get past the idea of a teacher and a student, because there is separation again. So what if the teacher is this something that awakens? It's the Sadguru within us. And when we show up with a beginner's mind, well, we hear the teacher coming out of Michael. And then we hear it also coming out of his dog. And then you hear it out of Wally. Joanne said, I was sitting in the garden and I made eye contact with the dog and there was a transmission. It's as if he said, I see you. You know, in that crazy thing rescued by Ruby, the relationship that Ruby, this dog that nobody could possibly handle, and this man who had ADHD, it was as if it was a relationship found in heaven. And the pregnant wife could see it. She said, honey, she said, you attracted this dog because you're the only one that's more unstable than she is. And her instability and your instability came together and created some kind of magic. It's like when Pepper came into your life to show you your light, your consciousness, your felt awareness, and we're all connected. I bring Humphrey to the class on Wednesdays. He sits in his little stroller, and there's a lot of grief in our class, and it's the sweet kind of grief about losing your four-leggeds. And Christy and Orlando were there, and she said, even after a year, we just miss so desperately holding our dog in our arms. And so I just wheeled the little stroller over and put him right in front of the two of them. And they backed up and they realized, here is love coming in the form of a one-eyed pug to meet you. And all of a sudden, whatever that was resistance in that narrative about losing the dog, all of a sudden, here is the spirit of dog waiting for you to reach out and have a connection. So what if we could have those sweet connections? I was sharing with them about Rescued by Ruby and how a dog can literally change your life. And you think, but it's just a dog. No, it's a living expression of light. So in the second week, and it was kind of fun, in this emergence, this light that we are, the Shakti that we are, is becoming conscious. Now, do you think it's just humans are conscious? Or do you think all of life is sentient?
Whoa, I think that's kind of a big idea, David.
All of life? Yeah, it's all conscious. People were talking about their gardens, and I have a lovely garden as well. And the fun thing about a garden is it always surprises you. And sometimes you get what you don't want, but sometimes you get what you couldn't even imagine. And so as you pull in my driveway, the gardenia bush that I planted maybe 10 years ago, who would sparingly maybe give me one gardenia a year, she's got like maybe 100 gardenias, and she's blooming her head off. And then right next to her is a thing called the porcelain vine, which if you read in the garden book, it said is incredibly invasive. But I've been lucky to get one vine to survive all these many years. And she comes up every year religiously, this porcelain vine, and she doesn't have anything to grow on. So I've created this makeshift thing, and she's literally totally uncontrollable. Now, for those of you who like to trim your hedges, the engineers in the room who want everything to be perfect, you can't have a porcelain vine that by its very nature wants to be wild and free like a tia. And so you have to encourage it. And so I've encouraged this wild porcelain vine. And when she gets really big, She gets outrageously different with purple berries and pink berries and red berries, and the leaves are white and pink and purple. And so right next to her is a bougainvillea covered with thorns, outrageously sassy. And so you look at that one corner and you think a French whore from New Orleans must live here. But then right next door, everything's kind of calm. And you know, it's the garden. And she's outrageously, they show off. You know, gardens do that. They show off. And you don't realize that you've created something that could potentially be judged as less than pristine and appropriate. But then you have tea in you and you say, yeah, but it's wildly free. And I would rather sacrifice this wild freedom for a controlled, manicured, antiseptic, sterile-looking yard. And then people come by and say, this place is really strange. I had the city almost give me a ticket saying that your garden is savage. I said, oh, I know savage. What a beautiful word. I just said it's kind of passionate and free and open. And so you see, we become conscious. Oftentimes that consciousness wants to compartmentalize, wants to judge, wants to think that there's a goal to get to. And you realize you've had it all wrong. It's not about labeling. It's not about getting to a finite end. Every gardener knows that. If you're done, you might as well die. It's always an emerging garden. Always. You know, I went over to my grow boxes this week. And Jody, we have our grow boxes, and they're yours as well as mine. And you plant these little seedlings, and everybody knows this who has a garden. You go over there to check your seedlings, and then you find out that one of your babies has been removed. And then you think, where is that baby? And then you think, maybe it's around here, I can replant it. And then you realize something has taken it out of the box. And so you go through the grief of the seedling, but then you make peace with the grief because you know that to be a gardener, you're going to have loss. You're going to have... I remember Serena had these blueberry bushes, and she was telling me, David, the birds are eating all my blueberries. And so she started putting netting around the blueberry bushes, and then the birds were getting trapped in the netting. And so I said, Serena, you're just going to have to tithe some of the blueberries to the birds. And she said, yes, took down the netting, and there was enough for both. So isn't this an amazing thing? When you become conscious, the idea that you had to be against the critters of nature, you could learn to work with the critters of nature. You know, we put bird feeders out and suet feeders, and it's so funny with people who feed the birds. They like certain kinds of birds are acceptable, and other kinds of birds aren't. My husband is one of those. And he hates the starlings and the grackles when they all come to the bird feeders. And so he takes the bird feeders down. If I'm just going to get those kind of birds, I'm not going to feed the birds. So he found a different kind of bird seed that would get the desirable birds to the bird feeders. And I said, well, let's just put the suet feeders out. And of course, he says, they're back. I said, well, one or two isn't bad. And after you know it, the starlings and the grackles left. And we created space for news. And all what happened there? All that left was a belief and an idea that we had to oppose a certain bird in a certain thing, that it was wrong or right. And you see, you're always dealing with your mind. You become conscious. I have found the enemy, and the enemy is me. The very thing that I've been avoiding is the very thing that will set me free.
Well, my goodness gracious, someone needs to get real with this stuff, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And so why are we here? The third week, I talked about being set on fire with love. That love is a fire, Rumi says, and I am wood. And my life could be summed up as I burned and I burned and I burned. So this power is an annihilating force. It's love itself. Now, could we play with love? Not as an emotion that we find in a romantic thing. That's the lowest form of love, is the agape, or is the eros love, this physical love. It's a beautiful thing, but when you get to be 73, you've done enough eros, you want to move into the philos, into this brotherly love. And then you truly want to move into the agape love, the spiritual love. And so I thought I would give you probably one of the most beautiful consciousnesses that I've ever heard. This is a compilation on love. And it's by Albert Einstein himself, E equals MC squared. And at the end of his life, why I think he's so valid is he emerged out of being a scientist that gave us the power of nuclear weapons to realizing that there's a much deeper power in the universe. And he says that power is the power of love. And so at the end of his life, he wrote these letters to his daughters, and he says, wait for 10 years after my death for them to be published. He says, because the human species isn't evolved enough to hear what I have to say. And Einstein says, and if we do not awaken to this power of love, which is the way we practice, he said, we will perish as a species. This is Albert Einstein saying we're going to perish unless we can awaken this love that we all are. It's all about that love. God is love and you are love. And it requires that we see it in a different way. It's a love that moves through us. And we all share this love. Boy, it's juicy, isn't it? So let me give you a little Einstein because he's so good. He says, I ask you to guard these letters, my beloved daughter, as long as necessary, years, decades, until our society is advanced enough to accept what I'm going to explain to you. And he says, there is an extremely powerful force in the universe. So far, science has not found a formal explanation, and it is the force that includes and governs all other forces. It's even behind any phenomena that's operating in the universe and has not yet been identified by any of us. Here's a scientist. I would venture to say a smarter engineer. And he says this universal force is love, with all capital letters. And he says that when scientists look for a unified theory of the universe, they forgot the most powerful unseen force. This force is love, and this force is light, and this enlightens those who give and receive it. We're here to be receivers and givers of this light and love. Simple as that.
Whoa, that sounds kind of crazy, David. Well, is there a manual for doing that? Well, I don't think so. Get a dog and see what happens, Joanne. Well, I think maybe that's the way to do it.
He says, love is power because it multiplies the best that we have, and it allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. Anybody can relate to blind selfishness of humanity? He says, love unfolds itself and love reveals itself.
Whoa. What does that feel like, an unfoldment, a revelation of just love? It's not something you make happen, Michael. It's not something you acquire. It's not something you get. It's an unfolding and a revealing. Whoa, gosh.
Then he goes on to say, for love we live and for love we die. This is Einstein. He says, love is God and God is love. I mean, one little sentence. God is love and love is God. And then he goes on to say, if instead of E equals MC squared, we accept the energy to heal the world can be obtained through love multiplied by the speed of light squared, we arrive then at a conclusion that love is the most powerful force there is because it has no limits. And after the failure of humanity, and we see it on the planet right now, in the use and control of these other forces in the universe that have turned against us, it is now urgent that we nourish ourselves with another kind of energy. He's telling us to evolve, to tap into this something that animals understand. They understand this. They're all about nurturing. Have you noticed that? When you get a four-legged? When my baby Speck died, Wanda Gale gave me a book called Soul Contracts, and I started reading it, and they said, every animal that you encounter on this planet, whether it's a wild or a domestic one, has a soul contract with their human. And they are here, without exception, to teach us unconditional love. And in reading that, and Jody can attest to this, every single one of them was an ambassador of love. It's not that some were ambassadors of love and others were ambassadors of evil. No, every single one of them. It's so funny, Gigi and Raul gave me a little goldfish for Napoleon, and I called her Josephine, but Raul appropriately calls her Josie. And I thought that this would be an estranged relationship because he had been alone for so long. But you know, he loves this little, I guess she's female because she swims around his tail. She's underneath him. She's above him. When I feed him, he's kind of slow eating his food, but she snips around and gets a little here and a little there. And you can see that she's brought life into this old fish. He was alone in his pond, just like Judy brought life to Hank. You know, he needed you just like Napoleon needed Josephine or Josie. So he goes on to say, after the failure of humanity in the use and control of these other forces, now we find there's a different kind of energy. And if we want our species to survive, he says at the end, if we are to find meaning in our life, if we want to save the world and every sentient being that inhabits, and it's all sentient, then love is the one and the only answer.
Whoa. Is it that simple, Tio? It's just about love? It's the only answer? Well, then, you know, you have to be like a child to enter this kingdom. How would a child love? It would love with equanimity. Jody was showing me her grandbabies. One is screaming and the other's got his little finger up his nose, and they're pure unconditional love. And she says that when she holds them in their arms, they fall asleep in their arms. Just like when I
when the pug wants to get in the front seat. Now, he can barely see, he can't hear, but he insists on getting in the front seat when we drive the car, and he curls around in a little ball on my lap, and as soon as he collapses, he starts to snore because he knows it's a place of love. So what if it's in those little moments that we can experience great love? And there are no acts, as Mother Teresa would say, there are no great acts of love. There are only little acts that are done with great love. My neighbor Chris has this crazy cat called Trey. I thought he was named after my husband, but he was named after Trayvon Martin. And shortened was Trey. And Trey's miraculous because he survived a million different things where he shouldn't be here. And recently, Chris sent me a photograph of him getting a haircut. He went to the beauty parlor. And he's the cutest little thing that he survived something that shouldn't have been here. He was a feral cat that was doomed from the get-go. And all of a sudden, through grace, he lost his feralness. He found his home. And I would venture to say, you could say Letitia and Chris are there for him, but I think Trey is more there for them. And you see how it works, this love thing. So he says, love is the one and only answer for our species. And perhaps we're not yet ready to make a bomb of love, a device powerful enough to entirely destroy hate on our planet, selfishness and greed that devastate our planet. However, each individual carries within them a small but powerful generator of love. Could we identify and relate to that love? Not to the belief system, not to our separate selves, not to our political affiliation, not to our religious bias. Could we just meet in that field of love like we do with our four-leggeds?
Well, I think we can. You know, I always did, said Bert. Well, yeah, you just meet in that field.
When we learn to give and receive this universal energy, he says, we will have affirmed that love conquers all, and we will be able to transcend everything and anything because love is the quintessence of life. Albert Einstein, probably 1950-something. Love is the quintessence of life. It's as relevant and as imperative now as it's always been, especially in this world where there's so much belief system that we've got to fight the forces of evil with assault rifles, rather than to fight the forces of hate with love and oneness and compassion. And it has to start with us. So the way we practice always is start with self. And once we can learn to love this self, then we maybe can love our neighbor as ourselves. And then ultimately, we want to be able to love the enemy as ourselves. Jesus said that. His whole message was to love one another as I've loved you. Not that I'm the special guy and that you're inferior, and that no one comes to the Father but by me. He says, no, no one comes to this divine love but through this sense of oneness with it. If you see me, you've seen the divine love. He was showing the way. So as my teacher Kennedy used to say, Jesus came 2,000 years ago to point the way, and for 2,000 years we've been worshiping his finger. He's the example showing us. It's not about him. It's about this love that all there is. And lastly, he says, I deeply regret not having been able to express what's in my heart to the world, which has quietly beaten all my life. See, he didn't find his voice until much later. And he was even then reluctant because he said the world wasn't ready to hear it. He says, maybe it's too late to apologize. He says, but as time is relative, that's kind of a pun for Einstein. As time is relative, I need to tell you that I love you. And thanks to you, he's speaking to his daughter, I have reached the ultimate answer that our work is the work of love. Your beloved father, Albert Einstein. So the way we practice is we practice through love. And you get to discover what that is. It's not a complicated thing. You know, and maybe you'll be lucky enough to get some grandchildren like Jody has, and you can practice love with that. Maybe you'll be lucky enough that someone will give you a pot with some plants in, like Serena gave me, and said, here's your responsibility. Now you get to keep it alive and nurture it and love it. And the very fact that someone gave you a plant and that plant is growing, you realize that you're experiencing the alchemy of love, and it changes you. There was a man, his name was Murray, and he lived across the street from me in Atlanta, and he always... You know, you hear these gay men that they say they just want what you have. I've had this long-term relationship. And I said to him, I said, you're not ready to have a human relationship. I said, you need to start with something smaller. I said, get a pet. He said, oh, those dirty animals. I wouldn't want one of them in my house. They're all filthy and dirty. Okay, so you're not ready for an animal. I said, why don't we start with a plant? And I gave Murray a plant. And wouldn't you know it, Murray kept that plant alive. And it wasn't maybe 6 months later that he finally got a cat named Delilah. And Delilah had a silk cushion that he would keep in the window. And when he would come home, I said, "You're getting closer, Murray, you're getting closer. Delilah's the next step." And so we have to learn to love it whatever way we can. And so, Jody, do you want to ring the bell? And it's, thank you, my beloved. There's that beautiful bell again. The way we practice is we stop. And in that stopping, we open. I love it that John Burney said this is an unfoldment and it's a realization that's occurring at the same time. So then we get to enter into that part of us that's realizing something. You know, is it an active mental thing that is realizing, or is it something much deeper? I sense that it is the awakened soul that knows that we're all interconnected in one life that begins to awaken in a realization. It's called self-realization with the big S. There is this self that knows no other, that is realizing, it is what we are. And we smile to that. Emerson calls it an infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. So it's this infinite presence that smiles within ourself, that embraces the moment, because all we have is the moment, knowing time is relative. Time doesn't really exist, it's an illusion. And then we slip into the eternal now, and we wait upon the Lord, as it says in Scripture. We wait upon this realization, this unfoldment, this emergence, this Shakti, this love, to unveil itself. In the Sufi tradition, they say there are 70,000 veils of ignorance that keep us from knowing the truth. And they say it's important that you lift the veils one at a time and make sure you don't tear the veil. What an image. And so maybe on Sunday mornings, what we're doing is we're lifting the veils of forgetfulness and we're starting to remember who we are. And we do this again and again and again and again and again and again until we arrive in the breath, within the breath, into that stopping place of yes, this is the life. The Lord has given all of us one life, unfolding itself, filled with surprises and mystery, revelations, a felt sense of interconnectedness, a sense of belonging, being the longing and longing for the being. And this emergent evolution is all around us, and we are in the flow, we're in the Tao of that emergence. So let's smile to that emergence. It truly is a flow. In the Tao, they talk about a thing called Wu Wei, and Wu Wei is the flow of the universe. And you can't get out of the Wu Wei, you can't stop the Wu Wei, you can't make the Wu Wei happen faster. It's the unfolding of presence within and all around. And we are a part of that. And in that, there's really nothing to do because you're not the doer. And then you recognize that it's all about being. And this something that is being is awake, it's radiant, alive. It lives in the realm of truth, not in facts. And the truth sets us free. And so it says in the Sufi tradition, you must want truth as much as the drowning man wants that gasp of air. And the truth is that liberating something within us that would have us know ourselves as love, as a vastness that is smiling. So to this vastness that we all share, to this smile of the universe, to this love that is exploding within our hearts, let's join in the heart salutation by saying to it, I honor you.
I
I respect you.
I love you.
You are the emergent presence of the One. Having fun with its creation. Liberating its voice. Dancing its dance. Not having a clue where you're going. Rejoicing in the surprises. Fascinated with the emergence. Always revealing. Beauty. Harmony. And joy. Waiting for us. To wake up. And smell all the roses. And they're blooming just for you and me. So open your eyes. There's a flower out there waiting for you to take darshan. There's a bird out there waiting for you to listen to it. There's a tree out there waiting to show you how to be who you are. And there's obviously someone out there to really irritate the bejeebies out of you so you can work on yourself. Remember, as my friend Nancy says, bless everyone and work on yourself. So thank you for sending in your tithes out there. And there's a basket in the back of the room. It's an investment you're making in your spiritual growth. Thank you, Michael, for showing up.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.